wisdom and his charming presence. If you get a chance today, you know, do try and have even a word or two with him. It's truly an amazing experience. Swamiji has inspired several social projects, including Anamrita, serving over 1.2 million meals a day, which in itself is an amazing experience. Bhakti Vedanta Hospital and Orphanage, Eco Village, and many other projects. Swamiji has also written a wonderful book called A Journey Home. Anyone on the spiritual path, I think it should be a must read for them. It's truly a wonderful book. It's about his own life story and his journey on the spiritual path from Chicago to Vrindavan to Bombay and all around the world. Without any further delay, I'd want to introduce Swamiji, and he'll take over from here. But before that, Bhai Sahab, come present a short.
I am very grateful, very honored, and very happy to be with all of you this evening. We have gathered together to offer our love, gratitude, prayers in celebration of Sangeeta's birthday. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of it. The Biyani family, a very beautiful family. I have not known for a long time, but time in knowing good people is like if you take a drop from an ocean, you understand the content of the ocean. So I first met them in London. Kishore, Sangeeta, and some of the friends and family, and father, mother, and I had the fortune of coming to their home, and along with Anil Agarwal, we met at his home, and through these encounters, I could understand the beauty of the spirit, the devotion, and the values of the family. And I'm very, very proud. I'd like to say a few things about family values. I travel around the world a lot. And it's one of the greatest concerns among parents is the welfare of their children, the influences of the children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and future generations. I believe it was Shakespeare who said, if you lose your wealth, you lose nothing. If you lose your health, you lose something. If you lose your values, you lose everything. These are universal human and spiritual principles. Just earlier this year, I spoke at the House of Lords in the British Parliament. I'm just a little Swami with nothing, and I'm invited to speak to lords and ladies and dukes and princes and princesses and people like that. And I gave my talk, but one particular line that I spoke, everyone applauded. And after my speech, everyone that came up to me remarked about how this one line very much affected their way of seeing the world. And for me, this was greatly surprising, because it's something that's so common sense. But it seems that common sense is not very common. Would you like to know what I said? I said that you can tell how rich you are by counting how many things you have that money cannot buy. Love, and actually being respected for our example, is something that money cannot buy. And ultimately, the heart is yearning to love and to be loved. From a spiritual perspective, the origin of that nature of our very heart is the love between Krishna, or God, and the soul. And to feel the infinite love of Krishna. When I was just a young boy, growing up in Chicago area, a particular story that I used to hear really made me think about what is really important and valuable in our life, especially in relation to family. In fact, I'm going to tell you two stories. These are Chicago stories. But I believe they're universally very, very enlightening. The first is about a man named Easy Eddie. Please raise your hand if you have heard of Easy Eddie. Raise your hands if you have not heard of Easy Eddie. So I will tell the story. Easy Eddie was one of the greatest attorney lawyers in his day. He was so expert, not only in investment as well as legal affairs, that the Chicago Mafia, headed by Al Capone, hired him to be one of their chief lawyers. Have you heard of Al Capone? He kind of made Chicago famous. Easy Eddie was able to manipulate the law in such a way to practically get anybody out of any conviction. He had such brilliance. And because he protected the Mafia of Chicago so expertly, they paid him enormous amount of money. He had an entire city block fenced off with a mansion inside and beautiful estate that was given to him. He had a son, and his son was given the finest cars, his whole family, the finest clothes. They had their own airplanes, they had their own boats. They could do everything and anything materially. His power, his influence, and his wealth was in such abundance But he noticed that his son was starting to go astray. And he had to question, what is it that I'm really giving my son, and what is it that's lacking? His conclusion is, I'm given everything, but one thing I am not able to give him is a father with a good name and an example of values that my son can build his life on. And he came to the conclusion, the only way that he can give that example and those values to the son is he would have to testify against the mafia with what he knew. Some say it was an undercover testimony, but nothing remains very undercover. He knew if he did it, he would be killed. Anyways, with the help of his testimony, many of the big gangsters of the Chicago Mafia were put in prison, and Al Capone himself, who was untouchable, was sent to a penitentiary, a prison. And not long after that, Easy Eddie was driving his car down a Chicago street, and another car pulled up to him. Machine guns blazed and filled his body with holes. He was dead. He was willing to pay an ultimate price to give his son a sense of values. Great sacrifice. Now I'm going to tell you another story of sacrifice for a higher cause. During World War II, there was a battleship with several thousand soldiers on it for the American Army, Navy, and Air Force. It was called the USS Lexington. It was fighting against the Japanese. 5 airplanes took off from the boat to fight. What happened is one of the airplanes, there wasn't enough fuel in his plane. So when he checked it out, he realized he couldn't go there with the others and make it back. So he left all the other planes in his squadron and started returning to the USS Lexington alone. But on the way, what he saw was horrifying. He saw 9 Japanese bomber planes coming to sink the USS Lexington. And the boat had no idea they were coming. And all the other airplanes had gone in another direction. He could have just gone another direction himself. But what he did is he alone attacked all 9 planes. They thought he was totally mad. 1 plane against 9, they were all shooting at him, and he was shooting back, and he was just charging at them. And then coming back and charging again and charging again. And with his bullets, he actually brought down into the ocean 5 of the airplanes. And then he ran out of bullets, and he started just attacking them, just flying at them and knocking off their wings and knocking off their tails, and another plane fell in the ocean. And whoever was left, they thought, this person is totally insane. Let's get out of here. And they left. When he came back to the USS Lexington, his plane was all damaged and beaten. He had no ammunition. He had a camera on the plane that actually recorded the whole thing. He was given the first U.S. Congressional Medal of Honor for anyone in the Air Force in World War II. And with his award was a speech that what he did at that time was perhaps the most daring, selfless, and courageous act in the history of aviation. His name was Butch O'Hare. And a few years later, they named the airport in Chicago after him, O'Hare Airport. And between Terminal 1 and 2, there's a whole memorial for Butch O'Hare, explaining exactly the story that I just told you. But what's interesting, his spirit of selfless service for the sake of others attracted national and international appreciation. Now, please listen carefully to what I'm about to say. Butch O'Hare was the son of Easy Eddie. He imbibed the sacrifice of his father and made his family forever famous for their heroism and selfless service. Recently, I was in California at the Muir Woods, where there's a redwood forest. And there, I heard a forest ranger speaking about the underground secret of the redwood trees. These trees are the tallest, biggest trees on planet Earth. Interestingly, most trees, in order to survive getting bigger and bigger and taller, they need very deep roots. But the redwood trees grow higher and bigger than any other tree in the world and last for thousands of years, and they do not have deep roots. These particular trees in California, some of them are 2,000 years old. They have withstood devastating earthquakes, massive snowstorms. They're standing on hilly terrain with very loose soil. How do they survive and keep growing higher, 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 and higher? He paused, the forest ranger, as he was speaking to a group of Chinese tourists, and I happened to be listening. Because when he said it was an underground secret, I became quite mystified and eager to hear. The secret is this. The roots of the redwood tree, they grow outward. Slightly underground, they grow outward. And every single root is reaching out to connect to the root of another tree. As soon as they connect, they intertwine. They wrap around each other and make an unbreakable bond. In this way, all the roots of all the redwood trees are connected with the roots of other redwood trees. The little tiny baby redwood trees, they're just growing, 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 and these big ancient giants come with their roots, and the little baby wraps its roots around the big one and has all the strength and protection of the elders. And in giving protection to the little babies, the baby grows and becomes an elder. In this way, every tree in the redwood forest is directly or indirectly connected through their root system with every other tree. Unity is their strength. United we stand, divided we fall. To actually care for each other, based on a higher principle than just myself. In the path of bhakti, we have something called seva, which you are all familiar with. Seva doesn't just mean to serve God and to serve others. It means samsidhir hari toshana. It means to serve without selfish motivation, without egoism. To serve is an act of love. To serve is an act of devotion. Just like a mother, a baby child may cry all night long and all day long if that child is sick. The mother doesn't get paid. The mother is on call, willing to give her heart, her life, give up her sleep 24 hours a day because of love, because of affection. And practically none of us would survive without a mother's love, because we're completely dependent in our early childhood on a mother's love. So this is a principle. My Gurudev Srila Prabhupada explained that a mother's love for a child is one of the closest things in this world to bhakti, or the soul's love for Krishna or for God. And the true fulfillment of life is when the heart is reconnected with that spirit of love. There's a story from the Srimad Bhagavat, which is elaborated on by Sri Jiva Goswami, one of the great acharyas. It's a story about when Krishna was just a little boy living in Vrindavan. A lady came out of the forest, a lady who was just a forest dweller. She had no education, she had no real physical beauty, she was quite old, but she would just collect some fruits from the forest and put them in a basket and go village to village and try to sell them. So she came to Gokul, Mahavan, and cried out, "Does anyone want to buy my fruits?" And little Gopal, Krishna, he saw how his mother used to buy fruits, not with money, because in those days they didn't have rupees, but it was the barter system. You would give something and get something. So he took a handful of little grains, wheat grains, and ran to the lady. And by the time he ran there, because he was only about 2 years old, all the grains fell out of his hand. There may have been one little grain left. And he smiled at her and said, "Give me fruit, give me fruit." And the lady saw his smile, and she just wanted to make him happy. Love awakened in her heart. And she took as many fruits as he could hold. He was just this child. And she filled his hands and filled his arms, and he smiled and ran home with all the fruits. And what happened is, her basket, it filled with precious jewels. diamonds, emeralds, rubies, lapis. But she didn't even notice that. She was thinking it was such a the most beautiful experience in her life, making this little boy smile. Her heart was overflooding with happiness. She wanted to get him more fruits. So she picked up the basket, didn't even notice how heavy it was, ran back to the forest, collected more fruits. When she got the more fruits, she went to put them in the basket, and she saw that the basket was overflooding with jewels. So she just dumped out all the jewels in the forest and filled it up with fruits and ran to bring it to Krishna. And she called out, "Gopal, Gopal, come, I have more fruits for you." And Gopal came out and she filled his arms again and she was happy. Actually, her heart, which was like a basket, was now overflooding with prema, with love. Love for God. The nature of love for God, it's like watering the root of a tree. When you water the root of the tree, every leaf, flower, or twig is nourished. In the same way, when our love connects to Krishna, then it naturally extends in a spirit of compassion to all beings. And that is what that simple little forest-dwelling lady had achieved. The value of love. The value of service. I'll tell you one simple little story in my own life, because this baby is crying and the mother's love is coming to the rescue. It's a confirmation of whatever we have explained. Because actually we have come to honor Sangeeta's birthday. So we're honoring by explaining the values of selfless love, which is the nature of a mother. When I was 8 years old, my mother was putting mascara on her face in front of a mirror. This is in Illinois in America. And I was sitting on her bed, and I was watching her. I don't know why I was watching her. I guess I had nothing else to do. And she looked at me and she said something that was so traumatic. She said, "Everyone loves your father and everyone loves me, but we do not love each other anymore. We have decided to separate." She didn't know what she did to me. That was such a shock. I felt like the entire world dropped out from under me and I was just falling into an infinite, unknown nothingness. I began to cry. And she looked at me. And she didn't know what to say. And I just ran out of the room. A few hours later, my father came home. And I knew she was going to discuss this with them. They closed the door. And I already told you I like underground secrets. So I put my ear to the door. They didn't know I was there. And my mother told my father what happened, how I responded to the decision they had already made. And there was total silence. And then I heard them decide, for the sake of our children, we're going to somehow sort out our differences and make things work. It was not easy for them. But after a few years, I saw one of the most loving, dedicated, relationships I've ever seen in this world. And I learned something from that. Real love is earned through challenges and trials. It's not just a romantic experience. When my mother passed away, they had just celebrated their 58th wedding anniversary. And they were like one soul in two bodies. They were so connected because their relationship was built on a higher principle than just their own feelings or their own thoughts or their own pleasures or pains. And when my mother passed away, the whole family, my father, my brothers, they all decided to do something that was completely historical in my family. They cremated her. Jewish people don't do that. The reason they cremated her is to give me the ashes to bring to India and put in the river Ganges, because they were so, so proud of all of the devotees and all of the people of India. When they came to India, all of you completely changed their lives. These little stories have helped me to understand what is really of the highest, most precious value in our lives. And at the time of a loved one's birthday, we remind each other of these values and we celebrate. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for a wonderful talk. Now the Abhishek is going to start. It's a little secret. It involves flowers, but what else is going to happen, you'll all see shortly.